Welcome to the Each and Every Child podcast. I'm Claire O'Hara, the programme director. Each and Every Child is all about exploring different ways to speak about care and care experience in order to shift public understanding and to tackle stigma and discrimination. We have 8 evidence-based recommendations that have been tested to do this. This podcast series will focus on the voices of people with lived experience, how they use the framing recommendations, the impact of sharing their stories or experiences, and how organisations and workers can fully support people when they're sharing their stories. For more information about the Each and Every Child initiative, please see the show notes for each episode. Hi folks, and welcome to our 3rd podcast in this series. The topic of our podcast will be a bit of a deeper dive into the recommendations, and particularly today we are focusing in on recommendation 6, bringing in context and speaking about solutions, and recommendation 8, speaking about concrete solutions to avoid that fatalism and sense of crisis. And today I am delighted to welcome back 2 of our previous guests, Rosanna Campbell and Oisin King, and introduce our 3rd guest, Shelby Hillen. Can I pass over to you all to introduce yourself, Shelby?
Thanks, Claire. My name's Shelby Hillen, and during the day I'm a dentistry student, but also work with the Voice of Experience group and several other care experience charities.
Hi again, I'm Oisin King. Daytime just a bit like Shelby, I'm a student at Glasgow doing politics and social public policy, which sounds as riveting as it is. I'm also a member of the Scottish Youth Parliament representing the care community there.
Thank you, Claire. Hi again, I'm Rosanna Campbell. I'm a participation officer for Care Experience Young People during the day, and I'm also part of the Voices of Experience group.
Thanks everybody and welcome to today. So as usual, I'm going to jump straight in to our topic and leave pass the mic over to you guys. So firstly, I was wanting to ask you all, why is it important to bring in context when you're speaking about your experience or an experience of care? Shelby.
I think it's really important to bring in context when you're speaking about either your experience or someone's experience of care, because it helps to remove that blame from the individual so that it's not about just one person's circumstances and how maybe they come into that situation. Usually if it occurs for one person, it's something that's happening for many people. So it also removes like the challenge for others to have to step forward and say it can be quite challenging for some young people or just care experienced people in general to raise some of the issues that they'll be bringing to the table. So if we can talk about it as a kind of community issue rather than an individual issue, that removes the burden on care experienced people to have to keep coming forward and saying, this is what I'm going through, this is why it's a challenge for me personally. I also think it really helps people understand a bit more. So if you're bringing in the context that this is something that a lot of people are struggling with, or this is a basic need that any child or young person would have, it means that people can kind of understand it rather it being a really like niche, specialised need that this one person has because they're different, when in reality it's just something that we all need to feel well and to feel loved and supported, I guess. And it also kind of makes it, like I said before, just a community issue rather than an individual issue. And I think that kind of normalises the experiences that we have, because it can seem for a lot of people at the time that they're the only person kind of going through this. But usually when you dig deeper, you see it's happening for a lot more people. So if we can just make it seem, if not make it seem, but just highlight that as a community issue rather than an individual issue, then I think that will help other people from having to come forward and raise the same issue, and it'll get us where we need to be a lot quicker.
Excellent, thanks. Oisin.
Yeah. I love this part, especially in the kind of early stages of development, developing the toolkit, because one of the things I really kind of delved quite deep on was the kind of accountability versus the blame aspect of things. I think when we're talking about care experience, it's so crucial that we kind of contextualise it, because that blame game is just it's really not needed. And I actually think it's a really dangerous game as well, because firstly, that's, you're not actually breaking down any barriers there. You're probably putting them up or reinforcing these barriers that we're trying to break down. And then relationships between organisations and even people and individuals ourselves, it just shatters when we're playing that blame game. So bringing in that kind of context when we're telling our stories, that's really important, because we're no longer talking about blame, we're talking about accountability. Because it's not that it's someone's fault, and it's not that we're wanting to point fingers, we're just wanting to better things. And that's why this recommendation is so crucial. And also think in terms of, yes, kind of making it clear what the problem is, but we know what the problem is, because we've been talking about the problems, the same problems at that over and over, and we're in that kind of circle of doing that. That's not what we want to do. We're not wanting to go into circles. We want to push and go further and really improve the lives of those in the quote-unquote care system. And therefore, I think it's even more vital that we're clear in the solutions that we're wanting to create, and not just the solutions, how we're going to get there. It's all great talking about the issues and the solutions, but it's like, well, how are we going to get there? And I think that's kind of some of the barriers that we're facing at this moment in time. But hopefully we kind of endure that and prevail that and keep going on.
Can I just unpick with you a wee bit further of what do you see as the difference between blame and accountability?
Yeah, as I say, I totally love this. Whilst developing the toolkit, blame is a really dangerous game, because when we talk about blame, it's an individual thing, which is not what we're trying to do here. Because as I say, it is not one individual's fault. I would go so far and say it's no one's fault, because it's almost a collective kind of thing that we've all thingied on in. So if we are wanting to play that blame game with individuals, it's not going to be helpful, because, as I said, the relationships just totally shatter. And without these relationships, I mean, we all know here sitting around the table the importance of relationships with anyone, never mind care experience, is crucial. Because everyone thrives with good, healthy relationships. We're social beings, we're social animals. That's how we're brought up, that's how we should be brought up, and it's how we thrive throughout our life, wherever we are on our journey. Whereas accountability, I see accountability as a very positive thing instead of a negative, unlike blame. Because accountability is going, I see what the problem is here. Right, so how are we going to fix this? And then working around the table with people. And actually, that's bringing in the accountability, and that is bringing in the context, because it's not all on me. It's on us as a society, other than individuals.
Excellent. Rosie?
Yeah, I very much agree with both what Shelby and Oisin said. I think it's important, especially for the listeners. It allows us to kind of not be able to assume what we're speaking about. I think a lot of the time you could say there's something wrong with a certain system, and maybe the way you describe it isn't going to be the way that you necessarily mean it, so that allows others around the table to be assuming a way forward. It also does avoid blame, but I also think it's really important that we find the solution and we speak more about the solution than actually what happened.
No, it's absolutely brilliant, and it's when there's such consensus among the three of you, that's what I find really inspiring. And I know that I keep going back to the word inspiring, but when we look at the future, and when I look at the three of you and the power and the intelligence that you bring, I kind of think, yeah, the revolution is absolutely in CFANs with the next generation. And we need to be really listening to that as well. There's a really interesting thing, again, it's always a learning curve. Shelby, just to highlight that you spoke about bringing in context is all about making that change. But that lovely thing about protecting others, about going, we don't all need to stand up and tell the same story. One of us can get up and tell a story that is a shared experience of care, and that protection and love that you feel for others, it's giving people permission to say, you don't have to share your story. And what a generous, generous thing that you do. I'm sitting beside you feeling quite emotional of the power of the three of you. Why is it important, do you feel, to be clear about the solutions to the issue that you're speaking about? What is it? And Rosie, I know that in your professional role as well, a lot of your job is speaking about the solutions. So why is it important to be clear?
I think if you face it with a solution, then you're always going to get a better outcome, aren't you? I think it's all right. It goes back to what Oshin was saying about blame and accountability. You can point the finger and blame as much as you like, but it's not necessarily going to get you the outcome that you'd expect or the outcome that you'd want. And I think if you come in with a solution, it is very much going to help and benefit yourself. It's almost saying, you know what, actually, maybe this part of the system's not working right, or the way you're doing this isn't working right. However, if you were to do it this way, it would actually make a really big impact. I think one thing I always say to myself is, Rosie, if you've got an issue with something, always think of what could be done better, how is it going to be done better, and what outcome do you want out of this, before kind of just going straight into a meeting or even a visit with a young person, saying, you know what, you've got this issue that you're dealing with, how can we solve it? And what do you want out of that that's going to benefit you in the long run and make it a better system for everyone, and not just individualising it to that one set person? So, yeah, I think it's really important to have a solution-based approach, and I think it gets you a lot further than kind of blame and playing the blame game.
Yeah. Oshin.
Yeah, I think, as I say, it's all well when... It's all well and good talking about the issues and solutions, but it's that in between bit that's really crucial. And actually, I want to pick up on a really important aspect of what Rosie was talking about, is actually where we're bringing in that context. It's also a bit about recognition. We're recognising that support that has kind of been that scaffolding around a child, which I think is crucial when talking about our stories that we are. And actually, it's one of the things that was said in the toolkit. And actually, thank your man again, James Gospel. We talk about James a lot when he's not here. I wish he knew how much we talked about him. But he said something, and I might get this mixed up because I always do. So one of you can correct me. But it was, let's stop talking about what didn't happen and start talking about what should have happened. Was that it? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. It was, wasn't it?
I mean, that's gold dust.
It is.
And it's just that small sentence just captures everything that we're talking about now, about that kind of bringing in the context, about that blame and accountability. But sorry for sidetracking, but Claire, your question about why is it important that we talk about solutions? Well, there's problems. That's why. To be blunt, there's problems.
Yeah.
But I think the magnitude of the problems, we forget these are people's whole life. Now to me, my life is, it's everything, and every small inconvenience is massive to me, and 9 times out of 10 I blow out of proportion, and because I'm quite dramatic like that. But then me as an individual, I forget, and actually there's a type of kind of thought process behind this, but I forgot. I read it in a book. It was a fantastic book. It was Reading Fast and Slow, but it was talking about when you're sat in a stadium, and you look around and all these people, and then you have this kind of, oh my, each and every one of these individuals has their own lives, their own issues, their own successes, achievements. Like, we are one, but very small cog, but by God, we can make a massive difference as individuals, never mind as a collective. Like, and to me, that is just the most powerful thing in the world. It's actually quite liberating, but I think we forget about that all too often. And I think solutions remind us, especially when we do it as a collective.
I'm going to pick up just before I pass over to you, Shelby, is that statement that James makes, that's about clarity. Because see, when we talk about what should have been there, because if all we talk about is what wasn't there, as somebody who's listening and who is desperate to see that change, sometimes it can be really hard to pick out, right, I know what we've done wrong, what do we need to put in place? And that statement that James makes is about clarity. It's been clear. And there's absolutely space for us to hold the anger and the trauma that people have been through. But it's our job when we're supporting people to go, what's the clarity? Because we need people to hear the solution. Otherwise, people can think, I don't know where to start. And sometimes I felt like that and going, oh, my good Lord, how do I fix this? I don't fix it.
And that's terrifying, that kind of starting, because even before you start, you're already stuck.
Yeah.
And there comes a certain point where you're stuck for that length of time that you go, right, okay, that's that. Maybe there isn't a solution,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, we can't allow that to happen.
Absolutely. And framing care experiences about addressing that fatalism. Because the fatalisms, I think, is not because people don't care, it's because they don't know where to start. So when you're clear, when you're telling us what should have been there, that wasn't there, we've got something. We've got gold dust, because we go, right, okay, you're starting to give us that clarity. And also it's coming from you, because we will always try and fix and go, what about this? Did you try this? Did you try that? And that then allows us to put it back on you. It's not on you, it's on all of us. And not just all of us who work in the sector, all of us across Scotland, because we need to create a society where everyone is given the space and time and the care. I'm going to come back to you now, Shelby. So the question was, just to remind us, because there's a surprise, we went a wee bit off. Why do you think it's important to be clear about the solutions?
So I think it's really important. It's something that a conversation we've always had, like at this table, is that people with lived experience are the experts. So they are best place to tell us what could have been better, what should have been there, what needs to happen for future generations so that they don't go through the same things that they went through. I think as well, when you give people clear solutions, that gives them accountability. Then they're then accountable to you. So it's not, oh, we'll go away and we'll think about this. And it's just, we've told you what we need from our experience, from other people's lived experience. Now we need you to go away and do the thing that we're asking. And I think as well, when you give clear solutions, it doesn't allow for people to interpret them and give their interpretations. So when you give a really clear solution, you're not getting someone's idea of your idea, you're just getting your idea, and they just essentially have to bring it to life. And in a really polite way, like, they just simply need to do what we ask them to. So it makes it a lot easier for them. They just need to find the structures and the resources to implement that. And it's essentially the people who are coming forward and talking about their experiences, they should just be amazed at themselves for standing up there and doing that, and knowing that that's a really challenging thing, and that should just be respected and reciprocated in the form of solutions being brought to life for other people. And I think that a lot of people are really keen to help, but like you said about the fatalism, or just how overwhelming it can be hearing someone's story, and you just think, I can't even imagine what it's like to have been in your shoes. It can be quite overwhelming to hear stories, because even still I hear stories and I think, how has this happened? Like, I'm truly amazed at, like, what I'm hearing here. Like, but when you give people clear solutions, then the people that are keen to help but don't know what to do, they know what to do. And even if they themselves can't do it, I think it's something that we talk about a lot as well, as championing the work of young people. So people who are privileged enough to be in different rooms and different spaces that maybe people who are care experienced or who have lived experience aren't fortunate enough to be in, even if they themselves can't act like bring their solutions to life, they can champion that work and share it with different professionals and try and make sure that the whole sector and the whole community basically knows how to act and what we're pushing for as a collective.
Absolutely, and we've got a beautiful example. Shelby, you co-facilitated a session with us with a group of young people, and one of the young people absolutely was righteously angry about something, and their first response was, I'm angry at that person and that person. And after they'd been through that workshop and that session and that safe space to discuss how Freeman can support, they then reframed their response to a question, and it absolutely, it took away the blame, because they were blaming an individual. And she started speaking about accountability. A very young woman, how powerful. And in a really powerful place when she held the audience, but they walked away under no illusion what had to happen and what had to happen now. And also that it wasn't rocket science. And sometimes when we don't see the solution, we go away and we go, so what about this? So what about that? And then we come back and you go, what about this? Did you miss? What bit did you know here? Or you come back and you go, you interpreted that from what I shared with you. But for this young woman, how powerful. And Shelby, you took her on a journey. And that was amazing to see that. And to see the work we've done with other young people that you've been involved in, Rosie. I just see that moment of power that they hold. Because people listen. They do listen to young people. They want to hear it. But sometimes they can't see past it. And the power that you've handed to those two different, very different groups of young people, and the power of their story was quite phenomenal.
I don't even, sorry, I was just interrupting you. I don't even think, I know, not like me. I don't even think it's handing the power, it's just happening to the power that they already possess.
Absolutely.
Again, and actually, and I've started just having conversations again with James. He's honestly, I feel like he should write a book just for me, just what has happened to that amount of wisdom. But I was speaking to James about the word of empowerment, because I see it a lot in different campaigns, my studies at university about empowering people, individuals, or different types of minorities. And actually, empowerment implies that we are given them power that we possess. However, no, it's...
They've already got it.
Yeah. We're tapping into the power that they already have. It's all we're doing is supporting them on the journey of going, I can do this. And it's much more than the word of self-esteem or self-confidence. It is simply power. And it's a really, really liberating thing, as you've probably seen Shelby co-facilitating that session of going, I can see that young lady's just clicked on that she has this.
Yeah, and I think everybody's kind of powerful in their own realm, but when we all go out into like society and we meet different people a lot of the time, and especially if you're a young person in a room full of adults, you can feel pretty powerless. But I think if we give these young people the tools to know how to slay the beast, per se, like, you know, it's like a cheat to the game of like how to interact with other people so they know what you're saying, because at the same time most of us could probably sit down with a young person and interpret what they're saying because we work with them so much. But if you're speaking to people who maybe don't have the same level of personal understanding, then it can be quite difficult for you to get your point across. So I think like what Claire was saying, like when we were at the training, we didn't really give in to these young people, we just kind of help show them how that they can bring what they know and their like unique experiences to the table and get that across to a room full of people who don't share those experiences for the change.
And it's as Claire, and it's as you were saying about actually allowing that space for the anger, the sadness, the hurt, the grief, the trauma, because that's a part of the journey. It's a really difficult part. But all of us, every single person on this planet has to go through that journey, and it's our job to ensure that we're giving that space, but we're supporting that, and it's a safe space.
And I think as well, like, so something I'd thought about when we were talking about solutions is a lot of the times young people might not know exactly what the solution is, and then I think that's where it falls to the people supporting them to hold that safe space so they can come forward and say, we don't know what the solutions are, but we do have a problem. And then that's when the professionals and the people around them supporting them should come together and give them that safe space and make them feel supported enough to explore it in a way that they feel comfortable with, at a pace they feel comfortable with to come to their solutions. Because it might not always be clear to a young person. Like Oisin said, you might still be at a really angry stage of your journey where you're just hurting your process and stuff. You're not solution focused at that stage. But if you give someone a supported, safe environment to talk through the things that they've experienced, more often than not, I think you will come to those solutions.
Absolutely. And we don't hold each and every child. We don't hold this. And what was lovely was the member of staff that had participated in that session. We weren't there. The three of us weren't there. But she was able to say to the young person, what is it you really want to see? And that's the power of a Freeman community, of as many people as possible. We all use it in our own ways and we all interpret, and you know the people round about you best, and just use it. And that's what really got me, was it was a member of staff that was able to help them work through the anger and bring it in and remind them, and then just and we got to see the video of it, and it was quite wonderful to watch. Just, oh, you know, we always like to pass. Is there anything that you feel that's been sparked in this, or anything that you go, I really wanted to bring this up, I wanted to say?
I'm going to jump in here. And it's more so if there's any young people listening, to be honest. It's just to make you aware that obviously your story is important. And the way you tell it is important, but don't feel like you have to tell that story either. And if you do have a safe space where you can speak to people or professionals, speak to them, and you might not have the solution that you want, but by working with them together, you'll be able to find that solution and create that safe space for yourself. And even if you feel like just now that maybe you're not ready to stand up and say, like, this is what I think should be happening, if you tell it to somebody like myself or Oisin, Shelby, Claire, anybody, I'm just using us as examples because we're the ones that are here today, your social worker, your school, it really doesn't matter who it is. If you tell them and you tell them kind of what you don't feel is right and what you would like to see happen, they'll be able to advocate that for you and bring your voice up to a level. And it might just give you that little bit of confidence to say, you know what, actually, I've made that change and I want to continue to make more change. Now, that's no pressure on anyone at all, because, again, you don't have to do that if it's not something that you feel like you can do. But that option's always going to be there. And just let your voices be heard. If you feel like something doesn't sit right with you, then say what's kind of going wrong. But, again, do it in a solution-based approach.
Sorry, Oisin. It's all right if you're not getting.
I know. I feel like there's so much though. I'll probably just add on what she, Rosie is saying. Oh, she's sitting right next to me as well. Nearly called her Shelby. The power of the word no. Wow. Which is, I think, a word that we maybe hear a lot, but it's not a word that we use a lot. And we probably all hate it as well, because I'm not a fan of the word no.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the power of actually using it is, there's a lot of self-respect in the word no. The self-respect is there because it's actually taking a step back and going, I've said my piece enough, or I've said it in a way that I didn't want it to be interpreted as, so no. And I think for me that was a massive, massive milestone in my journey. Because it's re-traumatising. And I think I did touch on this in the previous podcast I was in about that. about how stories can cause harm, which is also a part of the toolkit and our recommendations. And that one word, no, has saved me a lot of times. And the thing is, and I don't think a lot of people quite understand this as well, is just because you said no doesn't mean you need to give an explanation.
100%. And that's a lesson for us listening, that no is enough, and that you as no explanation about the no, maybe we need to go back and reflect on why you've said no, and have we actually asked too much, or have we put you in a position? So anytime you say no to me, you'll be thanked for saying no, and it'll absolutely be respected. Shelby, anything?
Yeah, when we were speaking about solutions, it reminded me of like how far we've come in this journey, and I think working in this group and like the respect we all have for each other is really special. And I feel like in here you're free to demand a change you want. Like, we can say this needs to change, this needs to go, and it just happens, and that's amazing. But unfortunately, it's not always like that. But I just wanted, similarly to Rose, if there is young people listening, be confident enough just to demand the change that you know that the community needs. And if you're working with organisations and they're saying like, oh, we can't provide this or we can't do this, ask them how they're going to help you get there then, or how they're going to use their professional contacts to bring other organisations that can make that change in, or how they're going to use their position in meetings or different situations that they're privileged enough to have to elevate this issue. And I think a lot of the time it can be quite, I used to be terrified of saying I'm not doing this unless I'm paid for it, unless I'm respected for my professional time or like my kind of input in it. And I think being brave enough to come to that point now and say, no, what I'm doing's work. So knowing the boundaries between I'm just giving you general feedback, and knowing the boundaries of between when you're actually doing a piece of work for someone, or somebody's doing something and they're not doing it the way you want it. Just be clear on what you want from the situation from the beginning, and just set out how you're willing to engage. And I think that's a really powerful moment when you can turn up and say, I'm engaging, but here's my conditions for it, and this is how I'd like to work with you professionally.
Wow. Stepping into your power, folks. Big lesson for all of us is that stepping into your power. Can I say, all three of you, step into your power daily, and it's wonderful to watch, and it's also wonderful to learn from, because when we see you stepping into your power, it pulls us up to remind us to step into yours as well. Thank you, Rosie, Oisin, Shelby, for giving your time, and for sharing your wisdom, and for the support that ye offer people. And I really hope if there's anyone listening that you've spoken to them the way you speak to us in our hearts. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you.
Thank you.